give you 5 minutes. I'll give you 5 minutes. Okay.
Thank you.
Water up here?
Yeah, please. Mm-hmm. Wow. She put this thing in my boobs. I don't have big boobs, but the mic is in my boobs here. So, in case you're wondering why this is weird. Good morning. My name is Julia, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm very nervous, and I'm very honored, and I feel extremely privileged to be standing up here. I'm going to cry because I was here 30 years ago when I was 3 years sober and a little kid, and I was saved already with 23. I came to AA when I was 20 years old, and you made my life. I've had a 33 years of a chance to be present, and it's all thanks to you. I don't know what to say. We were in this other hotel, and there was a big storm, and I was with a little kid, the army was still stationed at the time, so there was a very lively U.S. Army AA fellowship, and I had a little army wife with me. She was very light, and she was from California. She was blonde hair, and she was almost being blown away by the wind that was blowing. I was holding her hand at the beach, and you were all there, and a few of, how many people were there 30 years ago? You were there, yeah. My brothers and my sisters. God works through people, so you are my people, and you make God happen for me. Anyway, let me start by the beginning, because I only have 30 minutes. I love to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous, about this magnificent program. I can talk for days. So, like, it's really hard to pack everything I want to tell you about this program in half an hour. I'm going to try. I'm like Alcoholics Anonymous number 3 in the big book, who says, this guy said, I wanted to know why Bill was so happy all the time, and why he was so grateful, and what kept him going. And one day, he heard Bill talking to his wife, Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, and said, the Lord has been so good to me, curing me from this horrible disease that I just can't stop talking about it. I just want to shout it out. I'm cured, I'm saved, and I shouldn't be here. I would probably not be dead. I would be a mass of pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization somewhere in a clinic, stuffed with psychopharma, latest innovation, and make my family's life miserable. Maybe I would have found a very codependent husband, and he would cry, and my kids would cry, and it would be crazy. That's sort of my life with 53. I don't think I would have died so easily, but maybe I would have. Where's my water? Oh. It's hard with the big book here, but anyway, half measures, the veil, there's nothing. Who cares to admit complete defeat? Only the alcoholic who is, this is in the 12 and 12, who is at the edge of life or death, he's, you know, going to do all this stuff that we need to do. I don't know what I'm doing. I just have to, I'm going to talk myself into being less nervous. But, so let's start at the beginning. This morning, I went for a swim in the ocean. Today I have my body back and my mind and my soul. And I chose to go out and drop my clothes, went naked into the 5-degree water and swim. There was a rainbow that greeted me. There was hail coming down on the sea. There was one part of the sky that was black and the other one that was blue, and the sun was shining in my back. And I was like, oh my God. You know, and if I was drinking, I wouldn't see anything of it. I just wouldn't see it. And the best thing I remember from my first day of sobriety, when I got sober on September 23rd, 1985. And the most surprising thing was I'd read this pamphlet from AA with the 12 questions or the 20 questions, like Sharon mentioned. And I had answered yes to more than the afforded questions, and I had the ticket. And I'd cried when it said you're an alcoholic, you can go to AA. The first suggestion I started to follow was, you're an alcoholic, you may go to AA. I said, oh my God, that's what I am. But I was, there was one pamphlet that said, if you want to stop drinking, you just don't take the first drink. Oh, What? That's amazing. Amazing. It was revolution. It was like, what? That's so deep. So I went home. I bought a case of beer because I'm a beer drinker. And I like Belgian beer because it's strong and sweet. My favorite beer is Abbaye de Leff. When I see the ad, I still get a watery mouth. And I said, oh, it would be so good. But no, I'm sober. And then all my prestige as an old-timer would go down the drain. So no, better not. I have to rebuild it, you know. No. No, it's nice to have 33 years. Woo. So I bought a case of beer, put it in the fridge just in case, because you don't want to be too eager. And I just started. It was the 23rd of September 1985, and I just postponed it. I'm just postponing it. I just sat, and then they said, oh, you might take a shower or go for a walk or take a bath. Or I did all that. I just waited to postpone the first drink, and all of a sudden it was evening. And I hadn't been sober in evening time for maybe 5 years. I'm 20, so I started drinking when I was 14. And I hadn't been sober in the evening for years. And so I was sober, and I was living at a place. It was not my place, because I'm a parasite when I'm drinking. I take. And there was this guy in my apartment complex who had a nicer apartment than mine. He was older. I was young. I wasn't, you know, when you're young, you're always sexy to older guys. So what, you're not much to do. So I just said, yeah, give. He was away on a vacation. I talked him into babysitting his apartment. He couldn't say no. It's hard to say no to alcoholics. And you know, when you're sober, it's, you know, again, my sponsor, the second one, used to say, when you sober up a drunken horse thief, all you have is a sober horse thief, and that's a better thief. And so I'm more dangerous sober than drunk, believe me. My children know that. So I was in his apartment. His apartment was on the 21st floor. Mine was on the 5th floor. So I had the view, and I was standing. I was also drinking his booze. But, you know, normies, you can drink their booze. They don't care. They don't mind. They don't notice. What you do, you fill it up with water. And then they wonder occasionally, why am I my very, very finest whiskey, why isn't it having any effect anymore? And you just say, well, I don't know, maybe, sometimes, whatever. I don't care what they think. They're just too stupid. And also they're too happy not to be abused a little bit, because my life is so rough. So these normies and whoever else, they deserve to little abuse. And because I'm going to bring a little roughness. Thank you, Al-Anon. I'm going to bring a little roughness in your life. So make it more exciting, you know? Put more drama so you know what that means to be alive, you know? So you can feel yourself a little bit better. So the beer is in the fridge. So it was the evening, and I felt the wind on my cheek. And it blew me away, because I hadn't felt the wind on my cheek in years at night. And I was like, oh, it's actually really nice to be sober. I went to bed, and I didn't take the usual Mogadan, or I don't know if you guys remember Mogadan, I don't know if it's still around, or Valium, which I took because my problem was sleeping. I had been a non-sleeping kid ever since I was a kid. And it was, my mom, who is a seven, she was an adult in the 70s. The 70s were the decade of Valium and Mogadan and diet pills over the counter. Ah, what a life. And Valium. So when I was 8 years old and I couldn't sleep, what do you give a kid? An eighth of Valium, a sixteenth of Valium. And it only recently that I realized I was actually addicted when I was eight already. And I'm crying all the time, but and it wasn't her fault because everybody did it. And it, but I must say that my mom was raised by a doctor. Her mom was a doctor, and there was a chemical response to any emotional, spiritual, physical dis-ease in the human being. So whatever I was coming up with, there was a pill. Not her fault, but that's the way. And here, with whatever I come up with, there's a slogan, there's a prayer, there's a step. It's very powerful. These spiritual tools, these spiritual remedies, these spiritual medicine are much more powerful than your usual Valium or Mogadan. Anyway, then my first night sober, I said, oh man, I can't be this virtuous for my first night of sober. So I took a quarter volume because you just don't want to be too good, right? So I fall asleep with the feeling of the wind on my cheek and my new hope. I found the solution of my problems. I'm going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had gone to Frédéric Sauton, which is the permanence of AA in Paris, and I talked, that's how I got the pamphlet. I talked to this lady. There was an old lady. Old. She was probably younger than I am now, but for me she was old. And I said, I want to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I'm not an alcoholic. I'm too young to be an alcoholic. And she said, oh no, yeah, that's fine. But my father is an alcoholic. Yeah, that's good. If you go to AA, you'll find out about it. She was great. She never pointed the finger. And I said, I want to go to English-speaking meetings because I speak English. And also I wanted to learn. Somebody had said, go to AA, to English-speaking meetings, you can learn English. Oh, I go to AA to learn English. Why not? Who the fuck goes to AA to learn English? Really? Seriously? I mean, go to, you know, whatever. But anyway, so I'd also been to a French meeting one week before. No, maybe after, I confuse. But I'd been to the meeting having a beer. I drank a Heineken before the French meeting because I said, nah, man, in order to go through this experience, I need to get a beer. But it was nice. I liked it. And there was an old man coming up to me, another really old, but he was really old. And he came up to me after meeting. It was insane. The meeting was insane. People had so much problems in this meeting. They really had issues in this meeting. And he came up to me after meeting and he said, keep coming back. And I was so weird because he wasn't coming on me. You know, I was used to men, especially in France, coming on me, wanting to flirt. And he wasn't. It was so puzzling. What does he want? He just says, keep coming back. And it moved me, touched me. I said, oh, yeah, that's nice. I want to keep coming back. Anyway, so I fall asleep that night. And before I fall asleep, with a little bit of help from Valium, I have a vision that I've been in a tunnel for maybe 10 years, because I started being crazy before, with pills and stuff. And I was in this tunnel and I was seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, and I was going to be free from now on. And I've never had that sort of pain that I had when I was drinking again, thanks to you. You've always been there. You've always, you know, like it says in the book, my great hope, our great hope, Bill writes, our great hope that any alcoholic traveling anywhere at this destination finds an AA group. So that's our job. You know, God gets us sober and then we have to get busy, because there's a lot of places where when the alcoholic travels, there's no group yet at the end of his destination. So we can't stop. We have to continue. And it's still just a drop on a hot stone, our AA alcoholics. And now look at this, we're 250 people. If next year you bring each of you us brings two of their sponsees, we can be maybe 750. So don't, you know, we have to be busy. We have to continue. We have to create meetings. We have to continue. It's just, you know, people are dying, and we are the luxury. Where's the luxury? The luxury kids who have found this program anyway. Enough preaching. Stop preaching, Julia. Stop preaching. Anyway, so this is not what I wanted to say, because the best talk I gave you was the one this morning after my swim, but I don't know where that is gone. No, but I want to say half measures avail us nothing. So I stayed sober And God get me sober at 20. He put the best sponsor in my way, a big book thumper, Betty Simpson, my magnificent sponsor. I owe my life to my first two sponsors. They took me in. They never said, it's too much, you call too much, you are too much. They just took me in. They were there unconditionally, and they navigated me through the first few years of my sobriety, and they gave me life. They were tough loving, but they were also very kind. I remember one day celebrating Thanksgiving. I was 3 months sober, and I went to the Thanksgiving at my sponsor's in Paris in this beautiful villa of hers with her husband. He was also an AA, and they were listening to AA's tapers. There was all this food, and there were all these people, and there was too much for me. There was too much love. I can't take so much love. I can't take it. It's too much. I don't belong. And I go into the room, and I start to cry, and I cry alone, like I always did. I cry alone. And then she comes in, and I was hoping that she would hear me. You know, when I was growing up, I used to cry alone a lot. Today I have two children. I don't understand the concept of letting anybody, kid or adult, cry in their room for hours. But that's what happened when I was growing up. I would cry and cry and cry. And I was 9, I was 10, nobody came. There were 4 siblings. There was a father, there was a mother. There were even servants. Nobody came. Don't do that to your kids. Don't ever do that to anyone. If somebody cries, go to them. But you do that anyway, you're AA, you know. You're AA, that's what AA does. When somebody cries, we go to them. And she came into the room, she heard me, and she wrapped her arms around me, and she hugged me like nobody had hugged me ever, because she had this really tight hug, and she sort of massaged my back at the same time, and she said, "What's going on?" I said, "Oh, I don't know, it's too much." And she said, "Yeah, it's a lot of love for you right now, and it's hard to get into that, and it's okay." And she said, she just kept saying I was okay, and all this food, all this food was terrible, terrifying, all this happiness. Anyway, that was Betty Simpson. So she whipped me through the steps. And you know, I whip you through the steps, because Dr. Bob and Bill, they took the first 9 step in one afternoon. So why can't you do it? Why can't I do it? You know, go make your amends and then be free, because God needs the channel clear. We want to all be in contact with God. In order for us to be in contact with God, the channel needs to be clear. So how do we clear the channel? For us alcoholics, there's one way to clear the channel. You don't have to invent a new one. You don't have to go vegan. You don't have to do yoga. You don't have to do transcendental meditation. However, you can do it on top. But what you need to do is a 4-step. The third step. But the third step is just a decision, like somebody shared it. It's nothing. Nothing happens if you don't do the 4-step. It says in the third step, there would be useless. It would be useless to do the third step if you wouldn't go on a rigorous and frantic, whatever, say frantic or whatever the word they use. But you have to get busy into fucking action and just go do it. Because me, the alcoholic, I don't know about you Al-Anons, because you go differently, but for me, the alcoholic, action is the magic word. The answer is never to go into my bed and pull the covers over my head. It never works, unless you're really advanced. And even at 33 years of sobriety, it sort of doesn't really work. You know, I have to connect with you, get busy, do the dishes, wash the windows, or call, but get busy and work the 4-step. 4 till 9 are the cleaning, the ones where my sponsor used to say we suffer from optical rectitis. Optical rectitis. Rectum is the asshole, and optical is the eyes. So optical rectitis is when your eyes are in your ass and you have a shitty outlook on life all the time. You only see shit. Yes. And that's what I suffer from. I get up, I can go on holidays. My husband gives me the most beautiful holiday. Beach, great food, some reasonable sex, good books, pool. And I can get up and I say, oh God, I feel terrible, this is shit. I hate my life. This, and give me a meeting and I'm okay. So now when we go on holidays, we go to America. I can go to meetings nonstop and he can do whatever and then we can meet in the middle. Because I just need a spiritual experience every day. I'm a restless, irritable, discontent person one day at a time. And it doesn't stop just because I have a couple of years of sobriety. And I'm more dangerous. Like I said, it gets more dangerous. Because I have more power now that I'm not such a bag of self-hatred. More danger. So my sponsors, she whipped me through a 9-step. She said at the end of working the steps a little faster. Don't wait too long. And then she said when we are done with, she gave me, you can write a good 4-step with 3 sessions of 2 hours. Your main problem is procrastination, not writing the step. That's what she said. So when you, and what you haven't done, do it next year. If you have, it's bad, it's good to get into the process. And she said, when I was done with the 9-step, where she helped me point out my character defects. If I knew my character defects, I wouldn't need to do a 5th step. But as the 4th column, you know, where was I wrong? A little example, but very, 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 very tender example. Fear, so list of fear. I'm afraid of people because I was studying at the time at university. They're always group. I always eat alone. They always find each other. They're these gangs, and I can't connect. And she said, "Why is that?" And I'm afraid of people. So why is that? I said, "Because I'm shy." And she said, "But Julia, shyness is a character defect." And I was like, "What?" "Yeah, it's when you think about yourself all the time and what people think about you. It's a character defect." Oh! So I was done with shy. Finish. I'm not shy. Oh no. I go to these people. I say, "Hi, can I sit with you?" It was over. I just don't want to be that kind of person. Same with self-pity. She gave me you've had so much self-pity in your life. You're allowed 3 minutes of self-pity per day, not more. And I was like, "Okay, get on moving." You know, my sponsors. And you know, I haven't even started my speech because I wanted to say my home group my home group is the Friday night English speaking meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in Berlin. It's a speakers meeting. It's the best group in the world. If you're not convinced that your meeting is the best meeting in the world, find a new one, because God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. And it's important that this fellowship, the fellowship you crave, is one of happy, joyous, and free, and not of suffering and anger. And it's, you know, we have meetings all kinds of colors. So, you know, and so create this fellowship you crave, where you're on the beam, and you're spearhead of God's ever advancing creation. That's in the big book. That's who we are. Intelligent agent. That's who you are. We are intelligent agents, spearheads of God's ever advancing creation. I want to be flying there, and I want to be on that. So 9-step is important because you have to clean up the shit, and then you can be in contact with God through the maintenance step 10, 11, and 12. Daily contact. It was so wonderful hearing you, because this is the constant contact with God. That will be done, not mine. Shut the fuck up. Serenity prayer and three women. Wonderful. You know, sometimes the best A speakers are Al-Anons. Really, go online. It's really true. And my other home group is the German Big Book Study Group on Sunday. And my longing, for me, the fellowship I crave has always been that I could, because I had my home in the English fellowship, and I had tried to create this enthusiasm also in the German meetings, but that was difficult because there was a lot of resistance. And now in Berlin, we've started to create that. In the last 10 years, we've started German meetings. There's at least 2 or 3, more even, German meetings per day that are sort of on the English model, with a lot of gratitude, with time limits, with readings, with the big book study, with great speakers. And so we're changing the setting, and this is what that's our job. And So that's my other home group. Active. I have a sponsor. My sponsor is Kathy. She's in California, and I love having a sponsor. I didn't always have sponsors over the years, but I like having one, because when she goes on sponsor mode, she's like a channel for my higher power talking to me. I don't even think she's that bright sometimes, because I'm sorry. But when I'm in pain and she goes on sponsor mode, I get it. I tell you a couple of stories, and then I go back because I need to qualify. Have I qualified? I haven't even talked about my drinking that much. But I want to tell you about Half Measures. I love the ninth step in the big book, how it talks about we must take the lead, we must not shrink. Oh, there's a modern development AA, became willing to make amends. How does it go again? What with amends, the ninth step? Does anybody know the wording? Whenever, except when you do so, would injure them or others. So there's a new trend in AA. Them or others all of a sudden is me. And I was like, really? Seriously? You're not making amends because it will hurt you? I was like, it's absurd. Nowhere does it say in the big book that you must not shrink, even if it might be, if you did a criminal offense, you must clear it with the people that are around, and you have checked that they're okay with you making the amends. You have to make the amends because you've taken the third step, and your God is in control, and you have to clean up your page. And anyway, we must take the lead, we must not shrink. I have to say that I'm an alcoholic. I have to talk about alcoholism, because you never know. We need to carry the message at the same time. So making amends is a great moment of carrying the message. So I want to share you, because I'm not cured of alcoholism. So three things happened to me in the recent times. So first, a few years ago, I rented out an Airbnb place, made a lot of cash. It was great. You know, and I never thought that the government would want a little bit of tax of me from that, because I always feel entitled. And plus, I said, I'm too busy to bother about taxes, right? Because I'm so important in AA and my job. And so anyway, they came. I received a letter last week that You've rented out your apartment. I'm like, and so my head starts going, how can I manipulate this whole thing into lying and into making them not, how can I just cheat? The German tax thing. And naturally, I don't even think that this is not AA. I said, okay, but in certain areas, emotional areas, you got to be honest. But the tax, so I read in the big book every week. I just went to the amends, and it says it's easier to go to a friend than to an enemy. But going to an enemy is much more beneficial. I said, oh, okay, that's good. But immediately and slowly, I became willing to become clean. Of course, I said, no, I can't afford. People coming from trauma like us, I mean, there was my upbringing, I, 2 minutes? That's not possible. I became willing to make amends. And, so and a couple of more, because it's the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. So I make amends today. I just want to leave you, because I want to talk about what it does to kids. I see AA does with kids. I can't believe it. It's like I'm really sorry for you too, But no. I see the women, the mothers come into the program, and I see the children that have alcoholism. They've never drunk. They're pale. They don't talk. And they just walk around like zombies at the meetings. They're small, and they're like non-existent. And these women start, and I want to sponsor these women because I care about the kids, because alcoholism is such a cruel disease for children. It's horrible. It destroys them completely, and there's no pity. There's no excuse. There's no justification. It just breaks them. It breaks them. And I see these women starting to work the steps, and sometimes it takes 6 weeks. Sometimes it takes 3 months. I just sponsored one woman recently where it took 1 year until the kids started to speak, and the color comes back on the cheek of the children, and all of a sudden the kid comes to a meeting and they're bright and they're laughing and they tell you a joke and you're like, oh, hallelujah. And the mother, because why? Because the mother stops feeling sorry for herself. She starts going into action. She starts doing gratitude lists, and she starts working the steps and making amends. And this is what we can do. Joseph Cassel said that we are the miracle makers of the new. Joseph Cassel is a French author. I don't think the book is published anymore. He wrote a book called Avec les Alcooliques Anonymes. And he said, we are the modern miracle makers. And we have a great responsibility. You know, Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. Take your responsibility and go out into the world and really save the world. I have two kids. They're AA kids. And my son, 1 minute. Okay. The younger one, he loves AA. He loves his mom. He thinks his mom is the most powerful person on earth. And when he was in 10 years old, they have a special workshop on drug and addiction at school. He raises his head. Yeah, my mom, she's an alcoholic. She's also a food addict. She swallowed a fork. She can come and talk. I swallowed a fork. Teacher calls me and says, I'm sorry, your son, I think he's lying. I said, no, he's not lying. It's okay. I can come and speak at the school. And we round up a few speakers I want to tell you the other story, and then I finish with that. My other kid, the neurotic one, because he's the oldest. But when he couldn't sleep, I didn't give him Valium. You taught me just to sit with him, and he got through it. You know, that was I can't go into this. But he last year he finished school 2 years ago, and he said, "Oh, Mom, I want to go into an American college." And I almost laughed out loud. I said, "How ridiculous!" And ha ha, we have no money. What do you think? You're so stupid. I didn't say it because you taught me. I kept quiet, and I said, yeah, good idea. Good. That's what you taught me. You taught me that. You told me how it is to support and love someone. And I said, I'll support you, do whatever you need. And he did everything. He applied, he worked, he got a tutor on, he paid the tutor himself. He applied for student grants. He worked, and he's a 17-year-old kid or 18-year-old kid. And he got into one of the five best American colleges. And he's over there right now. The college cost $80,000 a year, and he got $60,000 student grants. And I was going to say, no, I'd rather see you in a TU at Berlin, because that's where I saw him. That's how God is. I don't know how big God is. I don't know how big God is. But God, if I led him, look at what happens. And of course, he's very happy and he's very proud and he's oh yeah, whatever. But it's not about that. It's about you opening the doors for me, for my kids, and for my life. And it just doesn't stop. It's limitless expansion. It doesn't stop. That's why I keep coming back. There's nothing where I'd rather be than a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with you, because you give me life. Thank you, and I'm sorry I've gone on.